Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
A solid backup to UC Askalainen, barrel-chested Danish internationals, semi-retired Iberian centre-halves, a highly functional midfield engine room, damaged goods at number 10, and a genuine warhorse up front. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés and the didn't play for Sam Allardyce's Bolton but really should have done 11. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 107 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all is Charlie Eccleshare. How's it going?
Good, yeah. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. We mentioned the other day the prospects that you're facing on Saturday, El Sakiko, which is I continue to declare is a hateful term. We discussed about whether this scenario has ever occurred before, and several people got in touch to say that both opposing managers have indeed been sacked after a game before. Charlie and Joe Marshall both got in touch to say that both managers were sacked after Sheffield Wednesday 1, Middlesbrough 2 in 2017. Gary Monk was sacked by Borough later that night and Carlos Carvajal was sacked by Sheffield Wednesday the day after on Christmas Eve.
Oh.
Okay, I'm not massively surprised it has happened before, but if I had to pick two clubs, Charlie, to be involved in such a thing, Sheffield Wednesday and Middlesbrough would be right up there. They feel very...
Yeah.
Sacky.
That does feel right. I mean, it does require a quite specific set of circumstances, doesn't it, as well, when a win... That's quite a good subsection of sackings as well, when even after a win, you still get sacked. I was imagining it would have to be a draw. That's a particularly cruel one. It's like, oh, you know what? Just go.
Well, I mean, at the same time, also, you know, we should say that, you know, sacking should never happen after a single game. You know,
no, of course not.
Big picture thing. So I actually quite like sackings after a win because it just means, you know, you're still shit.
Yeah.
Go away. Go away. But I'll tell you who's not shit, and that's Nick Miller, who's along with us today for what will eventually become the... Didn't play for Sam Allardyce's Bolton, but really should have done 11, which I'm thoroughly excited by. But before that, Nick, some serious matters. The draw for the League Cup quarterfinals will be held on Soccer AM at 10:30 on Saturday morning. Has the game gone?
I got a few outrage messages about this, but I thought this had actually been going on for a little while, and I was sure that I had seen... the League Cup draw being made on Soccer AM before, and I haven't watched Soccer AM for about 15 years. But what I think I have seen is the LDV Vans Trophy draw on Soccer AM.
That was the gateway,
which
wasn't
does,
it?
Yeah, it does feel like it kind of fits a little bit more, but I don't know. Is this game's gone? This game's gone, is it?
No, maybe not.
This game's gone for only the people who want the draw made from a velvet cloth bag.
Yeah.
And done by Graham Kelly.
It's probably not worse than the FA Cup draw being on the one show, is it, Charlie?
No, though I will say, you know when you hear people being like, you know, I spat out my cornflakes or I had to stop the car or whatever. I did genuinely have to record. I was watching the football yesterday and genuinely had to rewind it because I just missed what day it was. I was like, because, you know, sometimes it's after the first day or whatever, sometimes it's after the second. I was like, oh, I just quite want to hear that again so I know when... Spurs, if they're in it, when the draw's made, they're like the weekend. So this is mad. Intrigued why it was so late as well. But what was the competition? Was it the EFL Trophy or whatever it was, where they had like a series of disastrous draws where they were done in the middle of the night, or they were done on a stream, a live stream that broke, and it was
Scottish,
all...
There's been some Scottish Cup draw shenanigans as well.
There is precedent, I guess.
I mean, it's kind of not too bad, Nick, but then I've been reading the promotional detail, and in the build-up to the draw, the EFL and Soccer AM will be releasing a short content series which sees Fenners and Jimmy Bullard react to famous draws. Famous draws.
There are two elements to that, aren't there? Firstly, as you say, famous draws. What is it, just going to be that time Donald Trump did the draw with Satan Gravesy? But also the first half of that sentence is a really kind of chilling collection of words, isn't it? Content series, Fenners, Jimmy Bullard. I saw Jimmy Bullard playing in a he plays for a sort of souped up Sunday league team.
Oh yeah.
Which I happened to be watching for another article I was doing, and you would think that, you know, Jimmy Bullard, he's not that sort of long retired. He would be the kind of glowing talent that would be clearly better than everyone else. He wasn't. He sort of looked in place, which was weird. Anyway.
Well, yeah, that debilitating knee injury has certainly taken its toll. Mm. But Charlie, I'll round this one off with perhaps the most unsurprising quote of all. Jimmy Bullard said, "I'm absolutely buzzing to be making the draw."
I was just thinking, content, could that word, Fenners, content, that word just couldn't be more Fenners and Jimmy Bullard.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to them reacting to famous draws. I'll be tuning in for that.
So is that to say famous draws as in, so yeah, like you say, we think of the Donald Trump one as being a famous draw, but is that like the famous time where United were drawn at City in the third round or something?
No idea. I mean, I'm assuming draw ceremonies, but
right.
I can't think of any other ones, so
yeah.
God knows. I mean, but I would say in the game's gone territory, Nick, this is probably a more subtle attempt to gaslight the game's goners than the news of Paul Pogba's vegan Adidas Predators, which felt like a real kind of...
It really was too on the nose, that, yeah. I think. Yeah. Wasn't it? But yes, I mean, I like to think that there is someone in the upper echelons of the game who is winding up the game's goners, just doing these things deliberately to troll them.
Well, it's good to see them being unearthed anyway. Right, let's get on with the very quick adjudication panel this week, because there are some burning issues to get into. This, frankly, Charlie, is just sensational. This is from Nathan Lynch, who's drawn my attention to a fine and much needed addition to the curious footballing debate genre of "if you did that on the street." This is Phil Neville talking about people calling for managers to be sacked on social media. He says social media is the absolute cesspit for people that are just the lowest of the lowest. Yeah, fine. He added, "We live in an era where it's seen as quite normal to ask people to be sacked, which I find absolutely incredible. If you were in any other workplace and you walked into a shop and you said, 'I want you to be sacked,' I think you would be reported to the police."
Lovely.
I guess he's supposing that you're not an employee of the shop.
It doesn't matter.
You're just a random passerby.
I don't think that's an arrestable offence. I don't think it is.
But also, I sort of assume that must happen. If someone is unhappy with the kind of, I don't know, the Marmite placement in Tesco or something like that, or you know, the sort of petty-minded individuals who have nothing better to do with their time and complain about these kind of things. So I think I would have thought that happens fairly routinely. They're just like, I want to see the manager, you should be sacked.
I'd love to know what parliamentary act that you could be arrested for under for this offence. Odd that supermarket is always the go-to workplace scenario for this sort of thing. I anticipated supermarket and you delivered, so thanks very much for that. But yeah, Phil Neville, you're bang wrong. Listener Michael Cox has drawn my attention to a fantastic piece of dubbing, Nick. Football has a rich history of curious dubbing, but this story peaks somewhat in the middle. An Instagram model has been convicted of harassment after telling 6 million followers her ex-husband slept with prostitutes. Rawan bin Hussein, 24, dubbed the Brooke Shields of Kuwait, posted pictures of Mohammed Yusuf Migareff's family on the social media sites and accused him of giving her a sexually transmitted infection by sleeping with prostitutes. The Brooke Shields of Kuwait. I might be the best dubbing I've ever heard.
It is, but that's a sort of classic of the newspaper headlines written by people of a certain age genre who use arcane cultural references. I mean,
Brooke Shields, maybe it goes
deeper than that. Maybe Brooke Shields did something similar. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say we don't know the criteria that made her the Brooke Shields of wherever, of Q8. Is it that, I mean, what was Brooke Shields known for that she was
the Friends cameo?
Colourful Private Life, I would say.
Colourful Private Life, okay.
Fine. Oh, she was Andre Agassi.
I think she was
tennis.
Famous quite young. I don't know.
Famously quite young.
No, famous. She was young.
famously has remained famous young.
Notoriously young. Yeah. At that point.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed that one. But this coincided with a DM from fellow listener Jonathan Wilson. I don't know why the tactics nerds are getting into this, but Charlie, he pointed my attention towards the Wikipedia page for Nikolai Rania, nicknamed the locomotive of the Carpathians. The locomotive of the Carpathians. He was a Romanian football referee and player. And Jonathan Wilson was questioning about whether his nickname was for him as a referee or as a player. But actually, why referees shouldn't have nicknames? Why shouldn't referees have nicknames, especially in this style? It should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the English Kalina or something would be...
The Keith Hackett of the Danube.
Yeah, it would be the highest praise. I mean, Carpathians, because isn't Hagi the Maradona of the Carpathians?
Quite right, yeah.
So that there is precedent for that. Yeah, I'd love to see more refs given those kind of accolades.
Yeah, but Nick, locomotive of the Carpathians is wonderful. So epic in scale. I mean, there's so much that it evokes.
Yeah, again, what qualities do you have to be the locomotive?
I don't know. I guess he was just a box-to-box midfielder.
Imagine it's a
running style thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You must move very well or quickly or...
Powerful.
Yeah.
Or you spout steam from the top of your head or something, I don't know.
Don't know. Maybe just turned up on time. Don't know. Lastly,
very reliable.
Yeah, lastly in this section, Stuart Armitage, Charlie, takes us back to 2002. A story about Ryan Owen, somewhat of a bad boy of Welsh table tennis, who was banned for 6 months after an outburst at the Western Open, which saw coffee cups, match balls, pens and papers strewn and a chair kicked onto a court. The Welsh Table Tennis Association General Secretary said he is the George Best of table tennis in Wales. Important clarification, just in case there is a badder boy of table tennis elsewhere.
I thought you were going to say Ronnie O'Sullivan or something, but I guess that would have predated it. Yeah, George Best, that's very good.
The bad boys of sports like that are always, it's just sensational. And what it actually means is they kind of wear a pink shirt rather than the standard white, or once shouted during the game or something along those lines. The bad boy threshold is very low for sports like snooker.
Pens and papers strewn over
the
course.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
I know, absolutely shocking. But let's get on to the main event for today, which I think does require some clarification before we get into it. This is the didn't play for Sam Allardyce's Bolton, but really should have done 11. Now, Charlie, I can't stress enough that we're not going to be talking about the increasingly tedious and fictionalised caricature of Sam, Big Sam Allardyce. I don't think that's actually particularly relevant here at all. The only reason this piqued my interest was that Mick McCarthy and Steve Bruce both being out of work for the first time in quite a while. In fact, only the third time they've both been out of work in their careers together. And I thought it's bad news for the proper football man. So I thought it would be time to be celebrated a good slice of proper football man history in the Premier League. But this is a very specific type of team, type of player, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my mind, or my focus was drawn to the foreign signings. Because they're the more interesting ones.
Yeah.
So I was looking at that and, you know, I think before we do these, you know, you want to deduce patterns and this sort of thing. And generally, the foreign signings are ones that were seemingly past their best, because that's how Bolton and Allardyce were able to get them, because they didn't have the resources to go after, you know, peak foreign players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your mind goes... And some of these then worked out really well. Djorkaeff being one of them, Ivan Campo... Okocha, maybe he wasn't past his best, but he was one who others kind of, you know, decided they didn't want to go for whatever reason. So he was having to take a lot of punts, and some of them paid off a lot, some of them absolutely didn't. I also just noticed, alongside the foreign signings, some players who I completely forgotten pitching up at Allardyce's Bolton, such as Steve Howie in 2003, 2004.
Every time you examine the Allardyce era at Bolton for even 5 minutes, you will see a play that you never even dreamed of.
Yeah. So he was there. Ian Walker, another Euro 96 squad member.
And
was,
2004.
True. And Euro 2004, yeah. He was there. So you've got this weird combo. So all of those sorts are up for grabs. What I looked at quite a lot as well was World Cup squads from 2002, because I feel that was probably, to a large extent, what Sam Allardyce was doing. And from that, found very fertile ground. Slightly as well the 98 World Cup, because by then, some of those players were kind of over the hill, over the hill enough to be thinking, yeah, I could pitch up at Bolton. Freddie Bobic, for instance. There were also another sub-genre was players who I was going to put forward for this, but then reminded myself, oh, I actually think they may have done that, may actually have played for Bolton under Sam Allardyce. Step forward, Ibrahim Bar, who I thought was a really good shout, and then thought, wait, did he actually play? And sure enough, he did, in the same season as Steve Howie.
This is going to be quite an enjoyable minefield then, because there are going to be a couple of names that crop up that might actually end up having played for
either Allardyce or Bolton
or Allardyce elsewhere. So let's be careful. Nick, I think this is an important point raised by Joe Ganderson. He says, your Big Sam 11 that got away must feature at least one 2000s Portsmouth player. Herman Ryderson, Pat Pouba-Diop, Ben Jarney, many more candidates. Yeah. He says there are huge Big Sam energy in those teams. But I do feel that there's an important distinction to be made between Redknapp's Portsmouth and Allardyce's Bolton. Not just that Bolton were actually good. I feel like Redknapp's Portsmouth were much more scattergun. I mean, Allardyce took chances on players, but I feel like it was much more of a kind of coconut shy of potential failures or successes.
Yeah, there are definitely a similar vibe. There's a similar kind of, Portsmouth and Redknapp never really had your Kochs, your Djorkaeffs, your kind of,
never really nailed it, did they?
No, I mean for this one, I've got three kind of key categories. Mm-hmm. Got the kind of slightly obscure European cult hero.
Yeah.
So Stelios Giannakopoulos, Pedersen, whose name first name escapes me.
Henrik.
Thank you. We've got the sort of gnarled Englishman enjoying a career of revitalization. So, you know,
good.
It's people like Steve Howie and obviously Kevin Davis being the main one. And then the big foreign name that it would have been implausible for them to sign sort of 4 or 5 years earlier. And that's the one that I don't think Portsmouth really kind of nailed. So I think that's the key difference.
Yeah, quite right. Good work so far. Actually, also, I mean, all three of us have preoccupied ourselves already with big foreign signings or, you know, curious foreign signings. Let's not forget sturdy British talent that we need to pepper this team with. So do bear that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But with that in mind, I wanted to pick this lineup out from Rob Fielder, who I think may have drawn an early line in the sand with this. His lineup is Jacques Songo in goal, a back four of Jocelyn Anglemar, Roque Jr., Alpi and Abel Xavier, three-man midfield of Salif Diao, Jeremy and Mark Kinsella, and up front, Agustin Delgado, Marcus Aubak, and Bart Hoare of Belgium, which is a really weird shout, but also feels perfectly fine. So I feel like that's a good setting of the scene there. Let's get into the technical details, though, Charlie. Our formation, 4-5-1 of sorts.
Yep, that works with someone, hopefully, who can do the Pedersen role of playing either in that one or as the left back or in midfield. We want to have some versatile options as well, if possible.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, that five can contain pretty much anybody. defenders, midfielders, strikers, wingers, have anybody you like. But interestingly, one thing I didn't know about the Allardyce myth, if I may briefly delve into that, is that he claims to have brought 4-5-1 into English football. Back in 2005.
Really?
He says, I was the first to bring 4-5-1 into this country. I will blow my own trumpet and admit it. I know where it has got Bolton. We are rewriting history by playing in Europe for the first time. So he invented 4-5-1 in an English context. Did you know that?
Well, I didn't, because that's clearly bollocks. But you know, the idea that that Sam Allardyce has to say, "I'm going to blow my own trumpet." Of all the kind of managers of that era, he is that absolute prime own trumpet blower. Surely,
yeah, quite right too. I mean, given all the preconceptions he's had to rally against, I'm not surprised. Charlie, I want you to furnish me with some names for our goalkeepers. Let's just establish the goalkeepers he did have. Jussi Askelainen, of course, Ali Al-Habsi. Mm. This is the kind of ballpark we're working in.
Well, this is the problem, this position, actually, because the Askelainen was very settled.
Yeah.
There weren't that many. So I was more imagining, so he didn't really go for the kind of celeb keeper in the way that he did in other positions. I think had he done so, and had Jaskar not been there, a couple of options to me. Fabian Barthez, post-Man United, okay. Damaged goods, but, you know, he's kind of a big name.
Never really heard that phrase in terms of footballers who are past their best, but fine, we'll allow it.
Another, just because he came from a nationality that Allardyce was fond of, Zubizarreta, the veteran Spanish keeper,
okay. Kind
of to go alongside Campo and Hierro. And then the genre of more Urien Walkers, so a kind of sturdy, reliable English keeper. Thought Nigel Martin, you know, right towards the end of his career, he's got no chance really of playing for England anymore, but he's a, you know, a good guy to have around. And then my old two favourites who in my head are completely interchangeable, Paul Jones and or Neil Sullivan.
Oh, this is a very strong finish there. Nick Willib was wagging his finger in appreciation. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, Nigel Martin was a name I had. As Charlie said, this was the trickiest position to fill because Jaskalainen is so kind of associated with it. So I sort of just went instinctive and picked the first couple of names that from a couple of those categories that popped into my head. Nigel Martin was one of them. The other one, and I don't know why, Bernard Lama.
Yeah, oh. I thought about Lamar as well. In that Barthez space. The kind of slightly extravagant foreign geek, French geek.
He also falls into the kind of niche category of players I thought played a lot more in England than they actually did. Okay. In my head, he played quite a lot for West Ham, but as it turns out, it was only about 12 games.
Interesting, potentially crucial point. Did Bernard Lamar play in tracksuit bottoms?
Yes.
He did. Because given that Jaskalainen was such a fixture, and we don't want a like-for-like replacement for Jaskalainen, and I have to say, Charlie, I don't think we should fit the pattern of faded foreign star who's looking to kickstart his career, because I don't think that works for goalkeepers. But with Lamar in mind, I've got two tracksuit-bottomed goalkeepers, because I feel like Allardyce should have signed one at some point, and that's Gebel Kiraly, of course. And not just because he was a famed tracksuit-bottom wearer, but I have a vivid idea of Sam Allardyce referring to him as Gabs. You know, which we've got a lot of faith in Gabs.
He's been different class around the training ground.
Since Juicy's been out. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe if that's not too obvious, I also thought, what about 178 cap Saudi legend, Nick, Mohammed Al-Dayi?
Yeah, that fits.
Saw him in action at the France 98 World Cup and thought, I want a bit of that and 2002.
Just on a side note, the people at Wikipedia HQ are going to notice a very sudden uptick in the 1998 World Cup squads page and 2002.
And rightly so. Yeah. What better page to linger on a midweek afternoon? Okay, so I think this is a coin toss. This is either Bernard Lamar or Mohammed Al-Dayi. Now, I think a crucial point is that how old was Bernard Lamar in the mid-2000s? Because I'm concerned that he was about 42.
Okay.
Was he too old? He was born in 63.
Really? I was.
Yeah, he was at West Ham in the mid-90s or late 90s. So
yeah, late 90s.
Yeah, that kind of works. So I can't see him knocking around at the Barclays in the mid-2000s, which really... But then, of course, there is Nigel Martin.
Yeah, I feel... I mean...
He got a finger wag from Nick Miller.
Yeah. The majority is in favour of Nigel Martin.
He's wheeling away in celebration.
Now, fair enough. I don't want to dominate the proceedings here, and we do want a sprinkling of English talents, and Nigel Martin is our goalkeeper. Now, at right back, and the fullback positions for our 11s, Charlie, are traditionally a fairly unspectacular situation, but I'm quite excited about this debate. Tell us about your right backs.
Quite a few options here. I'll leave the English options to the floor. I've just focused on foreign ones here for the right back position. Two of these positions come from nations that Allardyce absolutely loved. One of which is Denmark, and he had four Danes in his squad 1 year. One of whom I don't think he ever played. Maybe shit. Now I'm down to myself.
Did he ever play? Who you're going to say. I feel exactly the same. I'm so excited.
Thomas Helveg.
Yes.
Did he ever? He didn't play for them, did he?
I don't think so.
I'm now thinking it's too perfect that he may have pitched up there. So he's one option. Then another nation that Allardyce really liked was Senegal. Habib Bey, who played for a number of Premier League clubs, but I don't think ever pitched up at Allardyce's Bolton, was another shout. And then the kind of, what are you doing there? How is he at Bolton? Was Christian Panucci. Kind of elegant, faded, matinee idol looks. Couldn't have seen more out of place with Bolton a few years before, but suddenly with Jorkaev and Okocha, And Hierro, here's Panucci.
Yeah, Panucci perhaps a little bit would have been a little bit too old, but I love the idea of him sort of battling out for a place with Nicky Hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So let's set the scene a little bit further, Nick. So Nicky Hunt was obviously an Allardyce favourite at right back. Bernard Mendy, Joey O'Brien, who is this kind of slightly ungainly but also quite diligent right back, which I think is generally a quite an important facet of an Allardyce team. So who have you got for us?
I think I've gone for a sort of Steve Howe cipher, which I think is is pretty almost on the nose. I've gone. You've got a look on your face that suggests you know what I'm going to say.
I'm just excited. I've never been so excited about a list of right back names in my life.
I've gone with Steve Watson.
I've got two Steves, and Steve Watson wasn't on there.
Steve Watson also, and obviously this would have been an alternative universe, so this might not have actually happened, but it feels like the Bolton players of this time had some kind of, there's some unlikely trivia about their play, about what they've done, and Steve Watson would fit that as being the unlikely scorer of a Premier League hat-trick.
Oh.
Which I think he did for Everton, and it probably would have been around this time. So
and he had his roly-poly long throw as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, without wanting to cast too much aspersions on Allardyce, would have come in handy.
One of the criteria I don't think I've quite nailed with my team is the player shoehorned into a position they're not entirely familiar with.
Okay.
And I don't know, Steve Watson could fill that role, but he was, you know, he was a bit of a utility player. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Interesting shout. Okay, I've got two further Steves for you. Steve Finnan.
Interesting. But at what stage, before he went to Liverpool?
Well, I mean, if we're looking at 04-05, he was very good at Liverpool there, or at least very functional. Mm. So I feel like he's probably not quite average.
He'd have had to have been in the early years of Allardyce, wouldn't he?
Slightly less effective idea. Stephen Reid.
Do you think of him as a right
tilts
back?
Tilts of the head from both Nick Miller and Charlie Akusher.
I don't think of him as a right
polite
back.
Polite tilts. No, okay, fine.
No, more of a
but then that could fit with the playing out of position.
Yeah.
Okay. This is my one final attempt to throw the spanner into the Thomas Helveg works. And that, and I agree here with Rob Fielder from earlier, Abel Xavier.
Yeah. Yeah, that certainly fits.
But
the other kind of equivalent, sort of vaguely equivalent team along with Portsmouth was that Middlesbrough team that kind of did quite well under Steve McLaren.
Pogatets.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, a lot of players, like Georges Désiré Job, could have played this Allardyce team. Mm. But I think I don't know. It feels like we're wasting our time even talking more. It has to be Helveg, surely.
It was Helveg. The unified chorus of cheers once Thomas Helveg's name was read out. Yeah, I agree. We are wasting time. Thomas Helveg is our right back. Now let's move over to the left, Nick. Under Allardyce, it was Ricardo Gardner, Vincent Candela, who could play on either side, which is always a staple of our themed 11s. That's a kind of vibe we're going for. Hit me with some names.
Well, I did. Initially, I wrote down Vicente Lizarazu, which I then discounted because it seemed too obvious a kind of Candela replacement.
I had exactly the same journey.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Interestingly, Andy Harrow writes in, and says, Vicente Lizarazu should have gone to Bolton in 2004 rather than the short-lived spell in Marseille. An Indian summer keeping clean sheets alongside Fernando Hierro and Tal Ben-Haim that never was. I'm seduced by the idea of Vicente Lizarazu. And, well, I am generally. I mean, a man with that Wikipedia photo alone deserves recognition. It's just going to take a lot of beating. That's all I'm saying.
The other options I had were, again, fitting in with the Hierro, even Campo thing, Sergi, the former Barcelona and Spain left back. But I think the one I've gone for is Robert Yarny. I don't really know why. It just seems to fit.
That's
okay. Oh, yes. Well, nearly time Coventry left back Robert Yarny. Yeah. Suspicious circumstances. Charlie, before you get started, I've got a couple of names to throw at you. Christian Ziga and Nuno Valente.
Yeah, I like that. I've got a similar theme. So I know we went to City, and again, that City team is probably not a million miles away. Tarnat, also of Germany.
Oh.
Major tournament fame, kind of, you know, the kind of guy who knocked around, similar to Condola, you didn't really know who he was, you know, his name. Arthur Newman, the Dutch left back.
Yeah.
And then of the breed of he's been consistent and good at a Premier League club, but that Premier League has now outgrown him and he can come to Bolton, Celestine Babiaro.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
So, I mean, a lot of options here.
Babiaro is a real twist here. I kind of want Lizarazu, but then I feel like our team is already looking a little bit too stellar straight away.
Yeah, I think he's just a little bit above.
Would you take Nuno Valente? Would you take him? I feel like we need kind of some average continental.
Wasn't he in the Porto team that won the Champions League in 2004?
Was he?
He was, yeah.
Oh dear.
Because he then moved to Everton, didn't he?
Yeah, I had only had Everton in my head. Okay. Oh, but Lizarazu just feels so good, but do you want to go for Celestine Babiaro, Nick?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's go with that.
That's
sure.
Right. Sounds good. Shameful as a Rizzo. We're going to live to regret that. I can just sense it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, let's go to our centre-halves, Charlie. Names he did have were Emerson Tom, Bruno Ngoti, Florent Laville, Tal Ben-Haim, Radi Jaidi, Julio Cesar, Fernando Hierro, who could also play midfield, Abdoulaye Faye, Martin Jetu.
So this is actually one of the most non-English positions of all, which is slightly surprising when you think of Allardyce, that he would probably really love a kind of old-fashioned English centre-back. So it shows, you know, upending our stereotypes again. Well, yeah, Roque Junior, who you mentioned earlier, was on my list. He feels very right. And then I had, well, I kind of followed the Spanish theme, and I thought Ivan Helguera, once he'd kind of won all he needed to at Real Madrid, would come and kind of wind down at Bolton. He would have been a bit too old, although it surprised me to see that he was in Spain's 2002 World Cup squad, is the beast from Barcelona, Miguel Angel Nadal. Nestor Cencini of Argentina, again, that kind of gnarled veteran. And then more up and coming, do you remember Christian Val, the French?
Oh, yeah, he was
young
at Fulham,
centre-back,
wasn't he?
Yeah, because occasionally Allardyce would get them ahead of the curve. And then I think he should be exempt because we've already got Babiaro, but Desai again once, different to Babiaro in that, I mean, they're both ex-Chelsea, but different in the sense that he would have just got too old, but, you know, another legend stepping down to Bolton.
Lovely shouts. This is a really good start. On the Desai theme, Tom Woodhead writes and says, I refuse to believe that Desai didn't spend his twilight years anchoring Bolton's midfield. Deemed surplus to requirements at Mourinho's newly minted Chelsea, he would surely have relished the opportunity to get back in the thick of it after years at centre-half. I can't see him in the Bolton midfield, not against it as a centre-back option. But Nick, who have you got?
On a similar theme to Nadal, I've got Couto.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I think works.
Similar hair to Campo as well.
Similar sort of. Actually, I don't. Was it your sort of slightly unhinged centre back, or was it just? Am I just thinking of the hair?
Completely. Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Still knocking around in the mid 2000s, just coming to his end of his time at Lazio. I really like this as a shout.
Yeah. Did a couple of slightly rogue and really going with the kind of wild man theme. Trifon Ivanov.
Oh, wow.
The late great.
Late great Trifon Ivanov.
The late great.
And the other name I had written down here was Aldair.
I like that, yeah.
Ivanov probably ruled out on age terms. Yeah. Sort of World Cup 94. Aldair, I think, went to Qatar, didn't he? Which really puts him in our ballpark.
Well, he does, because I was thinking that this nowadays it's the sort of players that now would probably go to Qatar or China or those kinds of leagues. Mm. They didn't have that option. One other I didn't mention was Rigobert Song.
Yes, good.
Another shark to throw in this tank.
Yeah. Okay. So my standout options so far are Ivan Helguera, who just feels so obvious, but I just got to put him in there.
Does feel
alongside
right, doesn't he?
Fernando Couto, but he just feels a little bit too Iberian for me. So, what about Robert Huth?
Oh.
Yeah.
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 It goes with the Middlesbrough team. Kind of. Presumably, Allardyce would have picked. Middlesbrough probably did picked him up from Chelsea's reserves and kind of.
Is he just too Pulis though, Huth? don't have these worlds colliding. I don't want these worlds colliding.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been very young at this point, wouldn't he?
Early being blooded in the Chelsea team.
Yeah.
But I can imagine sort of, yeah, him seeking first team football and then going to Bolton, and then Allardyce getting a tune out of him. Elsewhere, Nikos Dabizas.
Yeah.
Mm. And what about Stefan Onsho?
I'm not sure, actually. I think on show again, Steve Finnan kind of thing. He would put it.
He could have gone on. He was on more of the down by then.
Mm. Yeah, I guess he was.
By the time Allardyce could have got him, that would have been a more feasible.
I think it comes down to Fernando Couto or Stefan Onsho, and cast your vote.
I think Couto. I know we've gone for a lot of these, but it's just so seductive. There's something very seductive about him.
Fair enough. Yeah, he's basically Ivan Campo, but dirtier. So, okay, fine, I'm happy with it. Let's move into midfield now. I want to pick two... I want to break down our midfield, Nick, first. Let's pick two kind of functional central midfielders first before we get onto our more adventurous options. So, under Allardyce, that would have been Per Fransson, Kevin Nolan, Ivan Campo, as we've discussed, Dig Tofting, Stelios Giannakopoulos. So that's the kind of arena we're looking at here. What names have you got?
Well, I've got I'm very specifically returning from his bizarre and slightly ill-advised spell at Real Madrid, Thomas Gravesen. That would have been sort of 2005-6 era. I've got David Batty to fill the kind of aging Brit. And I'm not sure, quite sure if it quite fits with the gritty, gnarled thing, but Christian Carambo.
Yeah, he was on my list as well, in that Middlesbrough overlap as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to be careful of the Middlesbrough overlap, don't we? I feel like that should be capped up, the Middlesbrough overlap. Not dead against it, though. Not dead against it. So, Gravesen and Carambo are the standout options so far. Charlie, give me some functional midfielders, please.
Yeah, I mean, alongside Carambo, I had Alan Bogossian. I'm sure that's a terrible pronunciation, but of the kind of...
You always say Alan Bogossian.
Waggling your finger and being
You're never going to meet him.
He was in the France squad. Then Philip Cocu, who I was a mate... I was thinking, because he managed at Derby, and I was like, when was he in the Premier League? Did he play in the Premier League? He never played in the Premier League. I thought he must have done at some point. And has been mentioned, Papa Bupa Diop.
Just feels a bit too philosophy-y.
Maybe. Cocu. Maybe he's too... cerebral's maybe harsh, but yeah.
I feel like he would have had ideas above that station.
And then Diop, as has been mentioned, fulfilling the Senegal quota. I think Faye signed for Allardyce towards the end of his time there as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, kind of filling those kind of roles.
Someone whose Twitter name I can't read out and whose username I simply cannot decipher writes in and says, Emre Belözoğlu.
Yeah.
Antoine Sibierski, who immediately makes me think of Sylvain Legvinsky, and perhaps a role for Charles Nzogbia.
Hang on, he did actually play, did he not? No?
If we look at, was it Newcastle maybe?
I don't think he played for Allardyce's Bolton.
He played for Wigan, didn't he?
Let's forget post-Bolton Allardyce, I'm not interested.
Those are more, I had Bernard Diomed for those more, because some of those ones you mentioned are slightly more attacking options.
Was Diomed sort of defensive-minded then?
No, I think he was more of a winger.
Yeah,
But then I think of Nzogbia as being more of a winger.
Nick, I'm forcing this decision onto you. Is it Sibierski or is it Legvinsky?
Legvinsky, I think.
Fine, good, fantastic. Sylvain Legvinsky. And so enamoured am I by your previous options, Thomas Gravesen and Christian Carambo. That's the three we've got to... I'm inclined to leave out Gravesen because he feels too Stig Tofting-y. I feel like we're trying to find a replacement for Stig Tofting.
Yeah.
All Danish midfielders.
I mean, we'll have plenty of attacking players, so we could just have They'll just sit.
Okay, Carambo and Legvinsky are our sitters. I'm going to leave the number 10 for a moment, Nick. Let's talk about our wide men because, of course, under Allardyce... We're not talking necessarily about flying wingers. They could be if they wanted to. If he wanted to push Ricardo Gardner forward, he did. But it's more your Henrik Pedersens, your Yuri Djurkaevs, your Ibrahim Bars, and your Elhadj Diouf's. Anyone can play on the wing for an Allardyce.
Yeah, I actually, looking at my options here, I don't think I've quite nailed this, primarily because I've gone too hard on the Middlesbrough option, because my two wide men are Budivine Zenden... and Tunçay.
We need to stop with the Middlesbrough. I know they played each other in the 2000-something League Cup final, but I know they feel intertwined. But no more Middlesbrough footballers. No.
Yeah. I don't. In fact, discount my selections. I don't think I've got it.
Much as I quite like the Zenden shout, but I feel like we can improve on that, Charlie.
Well, yeah, Diomed was one of mine, one of the wide positions.
Wait, he was aging? What's going on?
chuck him in again. Echeverria, who I know very little about, but he felt gettable and was a kind of hard-working winger, as far as I remember, who I feel like would have fitted in quite well. Enrico Chiesa, again, just about gettable, not at the kind of
Can you see an Italian at Bolton under Allardyce? I can't.
Maybe. Were there no Italians there? Maybe not. I think those... Then a sort of complete wildcard shout, just because Allardyce was not opposed to signing players based on the basis of a good tournament, was Blanco, the guy from Mexico who did that ridiculous bunny hop skill. Him just suddenly pitching up and being like... Is that the guy? Yep, that's the guy who did that skill 4 years ago.
Oh, I'm tempted, but I'm sorry. He's too novelty for Bolton. Allardyce wouldn't see a need for him. I can't. I mean, he's all for the odd flair player, but I just feel like Blanco was too one trick.
A step too far.
Too much of a novelty, and we're struggling for our wingers. Sam writes in and says, in terms of foreign signings, I can too easily imagine that guy from Serie A with a shaved head and rat's ponytail. In a 2004 Bolton shirt. Don't know why, it just fits. That man is Rodrigo Palacio.
But he was way later, wasn't he?
I think he was later, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. He's about 23 around that time, so that's too right. Nick, maybe, I don't know what you think about this one. Danny Davis says, Andy Reid always felt like a perfect Big Sam player to me. Ooh. Sounds like Allardyce's Bolton always needed a few tricky players who could make things happen, and Reid seems like he'd be perfect to fire balls into Kevin Davis.
I think the theory is sound, but I think that this would have been too early for Andy Reid. He was kind of came through at Forest in about 2002, 2003, and then he must have gone to Tottenham by this stage.
It was 2005 he went to Spurs. Yeah. I guess he joined them in January. It could have been that after about 18 months there of not quite making the grade, Allardyce came in and, you know, reinvented him, because he also then played central midfield, didn't he, later? And I can sort of imagine him playing in a kind of either on the wing in his early days and then going into a sitting role.
I have got another shout here, because the sort of late 90s Parma team has kind of cropped up a fair bit. So Johan Mikud.
I remember the name.
Johan Mikud.
You know, kind of mercurial French creative.
I'm struggling here. No names are really leaping out. Who was the big guy they had up front who scored that very, very nice goal against Wolves?
Johan Elmander.
He's not playing on the wing. I just couldn't remember his name. I'm really struggling. We haven't got any wingers. Are we going to have Boudewijn Zenden? I think we are.
I think
Echeverria is overlap ruling.
Yeah, Echeverria is a great shout. I think he would
him on the right, Zenden on the left, two kind of out and out wingers.
Done.
Also, that maybe someone from that. Did Diego Tristão play for them?
He's on my list, but he's a striker,
forward, obviously. But someone from that Deportivo.
Like the left winger, Vicente, was that his name?
Yeah.
I feel like our wingers here are too adventurous. They're too stylish. We need someone who's just who is a Henrik Pedersen, who is just going to shuttle up and down, win headers. Who is this man? Could be British, probably Scandinavian. Kevin Kilbane, says producer Tom. What do you think about him in a Bolton context? Did he play for Bolton? Don't think he did.
No, he didn't.
For Preston.
Or James McFadden.
I think maybe
it's
really hard.
I mean, at the moment I think Echeverria and Zenden are the front runners.
It's leaving us with an incredibly exotic team, that's all I'm thinking. But
is there a Stuart Ripley type?
Yeah, I feel like our team is at risk of getting a little bit too exotic, a little bit too foreign superstar. I mean, Zenden will do a job down the left for us, so I'm happy with that. On the right, feel like we need a steady performer with a little bit of flair, but it is fundamentally a kind of solid performer.
What about someone like Trevor Sinclair, who...
Oh, what a good shout.
who was seen as very flairy and exciting in his youth, but by then was pretty functional, had his profile raised by playing for England, but I think by this point people would have been like, oh, he's not that great and he's a bit past his best. By then he's pretty functional and he's not really exotic by this point. I think he would do a job, you know, he'd be reliable for Big Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, the more I look at it, the more Bolton he becomes. And in the absence of any better candidates, Nick, Trevor Sinclair is our man for the right wing.
Yeah, I haven't got any advance on that. Of course, this would have been the shaved head era of Trevor Sinclair.
Rather certainly than post dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into more comfortable territory here. This is who's going to be our number 10. Now, of course, Allardyce's options were JJ Okocha, Hidetoshi Nakata. Nick, who are you looking towards for your number 10 that Bolton never had?
Well, I've got two here. One, it's sort of the idea fits, but I'm not sure whether he would be an Allardyce player. Juan Carlos Valeron from obviously Deportivo. And then my other number 10 option, I think I may have gone too big here, but he was on the kind of downward part of his career. Rivaldo.
Well.
Yeah, well, he was linked with them, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was pushing for the move, apparently. He was faxing them his wage demands and all sorts. So it's a move that very nearly did happen. But I think we can actually better it with a move that simply didn't happen. So Rivaldo is perhaps our front runner. Charlie, what have you got?
I've got someone who was more faded by that time, which is Ariel Ortega, who had been very much a kind of future Maradona at the 98 World Cup.
Can you see him at Bolton?
I can, partly because in my head he had sort of long, curly black hair, and that seems to be like a key way of fitting in. And I can imagine him arriving and everyone in Argentina, like fake Argentina kits with, even with Ortega wigs and this sort of thing. I just feel like I can see Ortega fever taking hold in Bolton. So he's one. And then, yeah, I had Rivaldo as well. And then I know you've nixed Italian options, but one I thought, and this would have been an almighty coup, and I would have lost a lot of respect for him, but Roberto Baggio. One last hurrah, and Aladici puts the call in, and Baggio arrives.
Fantasy.
Yeah, Ortega, I think, there is my main offering.
I mean, I wouldn't be quite so quick to dismiss Baggio. if he
thanks,
kind of
Nick.
Thought...
Yeah.
His team is absurd. This is an absurd team.
If Baggio thought that... Baggio kind of famously in the latter years of his career was much happier at smaller clubs, at Brescia and Bologna. So if he thought, I want to play in England, who's the English equivalent of Brescia or Bologna? Someone might have suggested Bolton. So I'm not saying it's the top choice, but I don't think we should dismiss it quite so readily.
I wouldn't dispute your logic there. That's absolutely fine. I feel like the name I'm about to throw in... finally, it's going to fall upon underwhelmed ears. But I'm thinking of a player who was mercurial, known to more intellectual British fans at that time who may have been watching football on Sky, had a troubled career, and Allardyce would have brought him over to have a look at him, probably get him up to speed in the Premier League. But we all know what he can do, and that is Jalminha.
Oh,
Deportivo La Coruña.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that coming, but I like it.
Yes, that because I was thinking earlier, Danielson.
Oh, of course.
But of that kind of Brazilian
I just feel
flair.
Like Allardyce would look at Danielson and said, "No, not even I can do anything with that."
Jalminha. Was he a number 10?
Yeah, he was very much so. Tricky number 10. Played with Rivaldo at Palmeiras, I believe.
I think he was. Was he? Is he the guy? He may have been. Was he who Deportivo signed to replace Rivaldo, possibly, or was it maybe the other way around?
Correct.
I'm not sure.
That's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So, really, I mean, Rivaldo is so...
I don't think it should be Rivaldo, just
it's
because...
It's too big a name.
Yeah, well, also, it's too big a name, but it's also known. He's always held up as being like...
Yeah, that's fair.
The one that got away.
How about Jalminha? He ticks all the Allardyce boxes.
Yeah, that's fine. Also, Jalminha, I suppose, is in that he... Some of these signings were ones that weren't so well known. So we want to have that balance of some of them are known entities, but some would have been like a little bit, oh, interesting.
Also,
see what Allardyce has done there.
I can see someone writing a kind of retrospective for The Athletic on Jalminha's time at Bolton. And one of the early quotes, Nick, being, well, we didn't know what to expect, but when he turned up to his first training session, the stuff he did in training was absolutely incredible.
Oh, never seen anything like it.
Seen anything like it.
He didn't like the weather too much, mind.
He would have showed up for his first training session in November, and he would have been, you know, three jumpers, big hat on, three pairs of gloves.
Almost walked off the first session. Mm. And, you know, he thought, this, what have I done? He was on his agent. Can I get on the first plane back?
They signed some no-mark Brazilian to keep him company in Greater Manchester. Jalminha it is. He's our number 10. What a great shout. Fantastic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's recap our team so far before we reach our figurehead. Nigel Martin in goal, back four of Thomas Helveg, Celestine Babiaro, Ivan Helguera and Fernando Couto. Sensational stuff. Midfield base of Christian Karrenbjerg and Silvan Legvinsky. Jalminha arrowing through the middle, flanked by Boudewijn Zenden and Trevor Sinclair. It does feel more Bolton the more I talk about it, but up front, Nick, up front, we have a huge decision to make. Because let's look at the cross-section of strikers Sam Allardyce signed for Bolton. Kevin Davis, Nicolas Anelka, Michael Ricketts, Salva Ballesta, Pierre-Yves André, Jardel, Javi Moreno, Jared Borghetti, Ricardo Vaztey, and 6'9" Chinese Peter Crouch, Yang Changpeng, who I have to say didn't play for Bolton. He only had him on trial, but at the time felt like incredibly Allardycean shot in the dark.
Anelka is the one I've forgotten about, which doesn't really fit into the criteria because he was sort of, don't know whether fairly close to prime career, Anelka.
Well, I think he does. He fits into the damaged goods. He was seen as a bit of a bad boy, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then
teams didn't want to go near.
Yeah, the rough diamond that was polished and then sent off to Chelsea.
Mm. So what are we looking for here? What do we want up front, Nick?
I think we want someone. Well, I mean, I'm going to say relatively functional, but one of the names I've got down here is the sort of complete opposite of functional. You want someone kind of very slightly obscure, but the kind of people who probably played a lot of Football Manager in the late 90s and early 2000s will know all about, and maybe a couple of kind of established Premier League names. So the ones I've got here, I've got Mark Viduka, who again the Middlesbrough thing. I keep going back to that. Benny McCarthy.
Yeah, he's on my list as well.
Yeah, but I think the one that I would choose this is another one that I genuinely had to look up, didn't actually play for Bolton, Kanu.
Wow.
Well, let's pick that apart. I mean, Charlie, where do we start?
He did not. I mean, some great shouts in there. I think this position was one of the funnest to do, partly because, as you say, there was such a range of real life Allardyce strikers. On that theme of strikers who I had to check hadn't actually played for him, Henri Camara, who did such sterling work at Wolves and Wigan, and Senegalese, feels very right. Benny McCarthy was mentioned. On the English theme, Malcolm Christie, who I can imagine pitching up and doing a job, though he also was at Middlesbrough. He went from Derby to Middlesbrough, didn't he?
We are going to be so good at actually played for Middlesbrough 11, aren't we?
Then on the... So I mentioned Diogo Tristan earlier. He feels pretty right at the end of... And he then went to West Ham, didn't he? So it would have been the end of...
Of course he did.
The end of Allardyce's time. Nuno Gomez. Davor Šuker, reliable Premier League goals. Hakan Šuker as a kind of... He's known to...
That's it. I think Hakan Šuker is the one.
Does it work age-wise? This is very important. Hakan Šuker... 34, so job doer, I think.
Well, or I mean, he was 71, wasn't he? So in, say, 2003, when Allardyce is starting to sign... he signed a contract in 2002, didn't he? So it could be, 31, 32, coming in. He scored goals everywhere he's been. Mm. He's physical enough for the Premier League. He'll relish that.
Very good.
And then last couple of shouts, continuing the Danish theme, John Dahl Thomason and Ebbe Sand.
Ebbe Sand, a popular shout amongst our listeners. Let's hear from our listeners, in fact. Rince Russ says, Christophe Dugarry.
Yeah.
And I reckon Allardyce could have coached one more good year out of Roger Miller. he's lacking fitness. He's lacking fitness. But we'll take a look at him. But no, mid-50s by then, so
things
no.
For strikers like that, it doesn't matter so much. Yes, he's 47.
Mark Quinn goes for an incredibly obvious shout. Yakubu. Yeah. Again, too Portsmouthy. Sam says, I reckon Allardyce could have got a tune out of Stan Collymore for at least a six-month loan period, pay as you play.
Maybe right at the beginning of his time in the Prem.
Okay. I think we've got our man, but I've got two more names for you. Alex Reel says Angelos Haristeas. As a post-Euro 2004 signing would be apt. The Greek good. Kevin Davis. Bring us full circle for this episode.
That really is good. I thought I'd made my mind up, but that's thrown a spanner in the works.
Does he usurp Hakan Şuker? I think he might do. But what about... This from Will Tucker, Charlie. That four-game spell that Giovanni Elber had at Borussia Mönchengladbach should really have been at Bolton. This is just obvious. How do you feel about Elber?
Elber and Jardel were very much interchangeable in my head because they were both brilliant on CM, but I didn't really know much about them in real life, and I probably had never seen them play, but I'd played hundreds of games with them. So, yeah, I like that as a kind of... cipher for Jardel. No, I think it is. It's Haristeas or Hakan Şuker. The only thing with Haristeas is he feels a little bit too man of the momenty.
That's actually a very good point. Yeah. Bolton wouldn't have been in for him, would they?
I think it's more likely they would have signed him a year or two later once his stock had fallen and his club couldn't have put such a high transfer on him.
Didn't he go to Ajax after the Euros? So that's I mean. You know, not the really hot the top property. Echelons, but
Bolton were never in for hot property,
no.
Were they?
That's
very, very much a theme of this. In that case, I've removed Angelos Haristeas from my little document here and replaced him again with Hakan Şuker, who I think is going to be. We need a player like this, Charlie, for our front man role, because we've got a very bizarre midfield behind him doing all sorts of things. We need a figurehead. So I think we're all happy with that. Let's run through our team then. In goal, Nigel Martin. Back forward, Thomas Helveg, Celestine Babiaro, Ivan Helguero, Fernando Couto. Lacking some British grit there. I feel like we do need a functional fullback. I just can't think of anybody, so that's it. In midfield, Christian Karrenbøh, Sylvain Legvinsky and Joao Meunier. On the wing, Boudewijn Zenden and Trevor Sinclair. Up front, Hakan Şuker. Nick, does this feel Allardycean to you?
It does.
Where's our British grit?
Yeah, I was going to say we're lacking a little bit of British grit. Although I suppose Nigel Martin and Trevor Sinclair relatively gritty, but yeah, I think that's pretty strong. I don't think anyone can really pick up. Well, no, actually, people could very easily pick holes in it because of the very concept. But still, I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I think Charlie, it was relatively inevitable that we were going to focus on a particular strand of Allardyce's Bolton. And if we are going to focus on that strand, perhaps we have nailed it then in that case.
Yeah, I think it's the funner strand as well, because that's what we remember more, isn't it? Those exotic signings more than the, you know, we love and respect the Nicky Hunts, but, you know, it's the Kochas and Campos that really, really gets going.
I mean, yeah, let's not forget our incredibly strong bench. Saudi legend Mohamed Al Daei, Steve Finnan probably on the bench after being done.
I mean, Paul Konchesky, could he do a job on the bench?
Oh, good, yeah.
Or even
good.
Start ahead of Babiaro, yeah. If we want a bit of English grit.
Stefan Onsho.
It feels like Konchesky would have gone there after his disastrous spell at Liverpool, though, which was
that's
obviously
true,
a few
yeah.
years later, post Allardyce. So
I'm having Elber on the bench, though. That's perfectly good. But we should finish, as we always do, Nick, with where would this team have finished? I feel like this team could have matched the peak Allardyce Bolton team of who finished sixth in 2004-05.
Yeah, you can see these guys getting to sort of the quarter final of the UEFA Cup at some point.
Mm. Oh yeah, they would have done some things in Europe, definitely.
Yeah,
Charlie, you can imagine this lot on ITV4 all the way, and then suddenly popping up on BBC One for the final.
Yeah, I can then imagine them imploding a sort of year or so after when. You know, because there might be quite a few egos in this team.
Oh yeah, Jarminia's off, isn't he?
There are some big names here. So I think Allardyce, the alchemy might work for a year or so, but might not be sustainable.
Who's our captain? Kuto? Guess so.
Helguera, maybe?
Yeah.
He's
cool
kind
head.
Of got the Champions League winning experience.
I think Carambo's got the kind of gravitas, I think.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. Well, sensational. Yeah, that took a lot of debating. So many strands to work with, but I think we've done a decent job. People are going to tear it apart, and they are welcome to do so. Thanks very much to you, Nick, for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks to you. I believe you called yourself the Jewish George Boyd, Charlie, once upon a time on the Footy podcast. Still happy to stick with that?
I'll stick with it for now.
Fair enough. Brilliant. See everyone next week. Have a lovely weekend. Bye.
The Athletic.